Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. This is program 242 in the series. It's December 16th, 2017, and to my right, he's not vivacious, but he is very talented. Mike Estella is co-hosting the show with me tonight because Lisa is in Florida. She's in warm weather, but she says she's actually watching and listening to the show. Mike, what do you think of that?
I don't believe her.
Yeah, no, she says she is. She texted me. She said she is. And our producer tonight, Shante Garth, is in the booth. And we have some great classic radio shows for you. All Christmas shows. We're going to start things off with Suspense, starring Keenan Wynn and Hume Cronin. Then it's the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. And then This Is Your FBI. It's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School. Brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film, The House with a Clock in Its Walls, about a young orphan who aids his magical uncle in locating a clock with the power to end the world.
Oh, that sounds good.
Interesting.
Yeah, all right. So what do they win?
Oh, they're going to win. What do they win?
The Twilight Zone CD set?
Ah.
Yeah, I think they're going to win a Twilight Zone CD set, unless we have Lou Malnati's Pizza, but I don't think we do. I think we have a Twilight Zone CD set. The number to call, 31. What's that? Oh, it's a MyPillow. Do you have that? MyPillow.com, Mike? You have that handy?
You have the info.
Oh, wow. Well, see, we're already messed up because Lisa's not here. It is a MyPillow. That is what you're going to win, which is a great prize, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
It's a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Visit MyPillow.com.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress portrayed Katherine Hepburn in The Aviator.
Men can't be friends with women, Howard. They must possess them or leave them be. It's a primitive urge from caveman days.
All right, who is that great actress? Call us, win a MyPillow, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We're back, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip one more time.
Ha! Men can't be friends with women, Howard. They must possess them or leave them be. It's a primitive urge from caveman days.
All right, we've got Joe on the line. Hi, Joe.
How you doing tonight, gentlemen?
We're doing good. Well.
Yeah, how you, Joe?
Doing wonderful, thank you.
All right, well, you're going to be doing even more wonderful because you'll be sleeping on a MyPillow.
I'm excited about it.
Who was that actress?
That's Kate Blanchett.
You are absolutely correct.
All right, you're a big winner, and you got to read that one thing one more time, Mike.
You're going to win a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Visit MyPillow.com.
All right, Joe, you're a big winner. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks. Have a great night.
You too, and Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. Okay, Mike, are you ready for our first classic radio show?
Definitely.
Suspense. Yeah. You know, you listen to these shows all the time. Mike's cleaning these shows up all the time, and I must give you thousands and thousands of radio shows every year, right?
Yeah, I've got a bunch at my place right now.
Would you say Suspense is probably the best of the bunch?
Suspense is really good.
Yeah, I think Suspense, to me, Suspense and Boston Blackie, I know you're a big Yours Truly Johnny Dollar fan, as am I, but Suspense really is great because you have all the big name actors, right? All of the movie stars of the golden age of Hollywood appeared on Suspense, which made it so cool. So we'll get into that in just a minute. Want to remind our listeners that we have a text in line. Feel free to text in 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and check out our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. WGNTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. We have our schedule there so you can see what we're playing each and every week, Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And the vivacious Lisa Wolf is in Florida for a few weeks. Let me think. She's not here tonight. She won't be here tomorrow. And then she will not be here next week. But I am only on Saturday night. I'm not on Sunday because that's Christmas Eve. They're giving me off Christmas Eve.
I think they're going to play Christmas music.
They might do that. Yeah, that sounds good. So next week we'll have some classic radio shows for you on Saturday. But right now it's time for Suspense. This stars Keenan Wynn, who, of course, was Ed Wynn's son, along with Hume Cronin. This is called Double Entry. It's a Christmas show, from December 20th, 1945, part one now, of a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
And its 96,000 dealers present Mr. Eddie Cantor in Double Entry, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear. Mr. Cantor appears as Eddie, with Sidney Miller as Sam, his bosom friend, in Double Entry, an unusual story of clerical crime at Christmas time. Altogether, a most remarkable tale of suspense.
It always balances in the double entry system. If it don't, you hang around until it does. Yeah, even Christmas week. That's what I've been doing all my life, keeping books. It's fascinating, positively fascinating. Look at them figures. Beautiful, ain't they? Calligraphy, they call it. That's Greek for beautiful handwriting, you know. I bet in my day I've written billions of figures. Oh, hundreds of billions. And cash? Say, I've handled so much cash, my fingers are calloused. Why, once I even got water on the thumb from licking it to count money. But so what? What's cash? You go along every day counting it, piling it up, never thinking who owns it. Never even think about what it will buy. Handling cash is just the same as adding figures. A job. Then, one day something happens that makes you look on things different. There's no excitement in an office, no danger, no heroism, no adventure. Not much chance to risk anything, to do something for a pal. So if a guy gets a chance to do a favor, to help out a pal who's in a jam, well, maybe you look on cash a little different. All of a sudden, cash is more than pieces of metal and bits of green paper. And if it's Christmas week, if it's Christmas Eve, and your pal is true blue, it's even more important.
Eddie, hand me that Dixie cup, will you?
Your ulcers bothering you again, Sam?
Yeah, they're bad. These ledgers are driving me nuts.
You got the wrong temperament for an accountant, Sam. You shouldn't let it get you down.
Things can't go on like this, Eddie.
What's the matter, Alice? Don't Alice understand you?
No. That's not what I mean, Eddie.
What do you mean, Sam?
You wouldn't understand it.
Ah, you always say that, Sam. I'm an understanding guy. That's what Mabel says.
Mabel says. You understand Mabel. Does she understand you?
Certainly, perfectly. A man's wife has to understand him. If she don't, what good is she?
Well, it's a nice way to look at it. If your wife understands you.
Don't Alice understand you?
No, Alice don't understand me.
That's because you don't understand her.
Will you shut up? Sometimes you're so smug.
Oh, lay off, Sam. You can't go on like this.
Like what?
Grouchy all the time? You got something on your mind that Alice don't understand? Try me out. I won't throw no dishes at you.
I can't tell you, Ed. It wouldn't matter anyway. You can't do nothing.
Well, just telling your troubles helps sometime. Talk, Sam.
No.
Talk, Sam. This is Eddie, your friend.
Okay. It's the auditors.
Oh, them guys?
Yeah.
Don't let them worry you. You're head bookkeeper here, ain't you? You tell them. Don't let them tell you.
I'm telling you, Eddie. They're getting awful close.
What are you talking about?
They're driving me nuts.
Why, Sam?
Eddie, I'm light.
You mean...
The books. They're light. They're short.
You mean that...
I'm a crook, Eddie. Yeah, an embezzler. And they're going to get me. Those auditors, they're on to me. I know they are. I can feel them getting closer and closer. Now, after 9 years, they're on the trail, Ed.
You a crook, Sam. I don't believe it.
Oh, I wish I were dreaming.
Why, Sam, you're the fair-haired boy around here. All you had to do was ask.
Ask who? Bartholomew, that tight-fisted...
It's Alice. She's to blame, I know. She wasn't satisfied with your salary. She wanted ermine, capes, diamonds, a box at the opera. I know she drove you to it, Sam.
Don't blame her, Eddie. This one we can't blame on Alice. She doesn't even know anything about this caper.
Well, if she didn't drive you to it, why'd you do it?
All those kids on the block. They wanted to go to camp. Yeah, that's how it started, Eddie. With unknown benefactory.
You don't make sense, Sam.
Just $100 or so at first. I figured to put it right back. Then the papers come out with unknown benefactor sends 20 kids to summer camp. Oh, that got me. That unknown benefactor.
So that was you, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And pretty soon I was taking out $100 here, $100 there, sending it off to all sorts of people and outfits. I sent dough to help the Institute for Aged Cats.
Oh.
Yeah, then I was an unknown contributor to Help Save Vaudeville Movement. And kids. I was always helping kids. A regular Scrooge.
No. Santa Claus, Sam.
Yeah. And it made me feel great. Of course, I'd cover up on the books here with a fake entry, hoping I'd hit on the market and be able to put it all back, you know.
Yeah, but you were always unable to make a recoup. Kept getting in deeper. Sam Crockett, an embezzler, and for 9 years...
Don't say it, Eddie.
9 years? How much did you take in all that time?
$100,000.11. Where am I going to get that kind of money?
I could dig up the 11 cents.
But... Oh, wisecracks. That's all you're good for. Jail staring me in the face.
What do you want me to say? What do you generally say? What do you generally say to your friend when he tells you he's a crook?
I told you because it feels good to get it off my chest. 9 years of hell.
That's why you've been so nervous.
That's where my ulcers come from.
Every night working late, covering up.
Sweating, worrying. Thinking of the ultimate end. The wall's closing in on me, Eddie.
And now... Hello, yes? Yes, Mr. Bartholomew? Send Crockett in? Okay.
My master's voice.
Bartholomew wants to see you. Wag your tail, Fido.
Wag it? I can't even drag it. Say, Eddie, didn't I see the auditors go in there a minute ago?
Yeah. Yeah, come to think they did, Sam.
This is it, kid. Merry Christmas.
Maybe it's not, Sam.
I got a feeling. I'm not scared, Eddie. No, it's a relief. Now I'll sleep nights. Maybe my ulcer will clear up. Oh, but those kids. Those kids are going to take it hard when they read about their unknown benefactor doing time.
$100,000. Holy. Wonder what he did with the 11 cents. Sales tax, I suppose. What a chump.
Your name, Eddie?
Yeah, what about it?
What about it? I'm Fink Freeze. Mr. Flint said to drop in and see if you want to place a bet today.
Flint who?
What do you mean, Flint who? Mike Flint. Ain't your name Eddie?
Sure, but I never heard of Mike Flint. You got the wrong Eddie. My name's Sullivan.
Oh, he didn't tell me the last name. How am I to know? He says look up Eddie in 411 Perry Trust Building.
This is 511.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Wait. You say you take bets on horses?
I'll take a bet on a camel if he's running a tropical park.
Are you a bookie?
Well, I ain't no taxidermist, pal.
Say, I may be the right Eddie after all. Got any odds?
Well, if you're on the level, Eddie...
You're in the business. Do I look like a stool pigeon?
Okay, Eddie. I guess you're okay. Odds, huh? You want odds? Well, let's see. A tropical park, I can give you 10-1 in the first race. Aleppo, finished last in a field of 9, his only other start.
Let's see the form.
You see, odds is okay if you don't bet too heavy. Play odds like a side bet, Eddie. The thing to play is the jockey, not the horse. Now, you take Sylvester. Won 3 yesterday, 2 on Monday, 1 on Sunday. Oh, he's hot, very hot. He can ride any dog into the money.
Does he ride a long shot today?
No, he's got 2 favorites and 4 short odds nags. He'll win, say, 2 races today, maybe 3, one for Santa Claus.
Say, here's a 50-to-1 shot. Altruism.
Altruism? I never heard of him.
I got a hunch.
Well, play it, play it. Always play hunches. Let's see who this altruism is. Never raced before.
Then how do you know he's no good?
Well, I don't, but look who he's running against. War Alarm, unbeaten in 3 starts. Test Tube, last year's Gold Cup runner-up. And File Clerk. Oh, say, there's a hunch for you, Eddie.
I ain't no file clerk, and I'm playing altruism if you don't mind.
Okay, Eddie, okay. Just give me your $2.
Is that all I can bet?
Oh, no, Eddie, but, gee, I don't want to play you for a sucker.
How about $2,000?
Oh, why don't you tie that bull to a fence?
Will you take $2,000 on altruism?
On the level, Eddie?
Sure as tonight's Christmas Eve.
Where would you get that kind of dough?
Borrow it from the boss.
Well, I'll have to get Flint's okay. Let me use your phone, huh?
Go ahead.
$2,000. Oh, well, that's not stage money, Eddie.
Neither is $100,000. Could you pay off?
Well, sure. Flint will cover any bet I make. Hello. Give me Flint. See, this Flint is a very smart cookie. Maybe he don't want... Oh, hello, Mike? This is Fink. Look, there's a man's got $2,000 he wants to put on an ad called Altruism in the third of Tropical. The odds are 50-to-1. How about it? Uh-huh. Yeah, but if he wins, Mike... well, sure, I'm a gambler, but 50 to... Hey! Guy hung up. Funny guy, this Flint. Am I a gambler, he says. Well, okay, Eddie. We'll play $2,000 on altruism's nose for you, okay?
Well, all right, but it's a lot of dough to hand over to someone I never saw before.
Well, I never saw you before either, mister.
Yeah, but what chance are you taking?
Look, quit stalling, Eddie. Are you betting or not?
Okay. Wait till I get the money.
All right, we're listening to Suspense. This is a show called Double Entry. We did load the wrong episode of Double Entry, though. The episode we were going to play was from December 20th, 1945, with Keenan Wynn and Hume Cronin, but we loaded a show from a few years later, December 22nd, 1949, starring Eddie Cantor. It is the same story. It's just a different date and at different stars. This is the Eddie Cantor episode of Double Entry from December 22nd, 1949. And that's what we're playing for you tonight. Sorry about that. But let's take a quick break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Well, Lisa Wolf is on vacation. But the very talented executive producer of the show, Mike Estella, is here. What's up, Mike?
Not too much. How are you doing?
Good. Would you get your Christmas shopping done?
Nope.
You here's a nope. You didn't even hesitate there. I got a little bit of it done. I still have. I think this week I'll finish it all up. Probably like most people, you know, you got some of it done, but not all of it. You got some of it done, didn't you?
I'm not even sure if I have some of it done.
Really? Wow. Well, here's a news flash. Christmas is coming up, like
true,
in a week.
Yes.
Okay, just want to give you that bit of information.
I've always been able to get it together and make it happen.
Yeah. This year, it was interesting because I did a lot of my shopping online. You know, I have stuff kind of coming in, you know, for the kids and things. I didn't do as much going out there, you know, and buying things.
Yeah.
But I still have, as I say, that few more to go. So I can't risk it not getting to me on time, you know, buying it online. So I'm going to go out physically and hit the mall. You know, I went to the Christmas story of Cinnamon Bear Play in Wheaton today.
Nice.
There's, I think, one more showing of it tomorrow, but I think it's sold out. I was so impressed. I got to tell you, they did an unbelievable job. It was almost like I was listening to the Cinnamon Bear radio show.
Ah,
that's how good it was.
All
yeah.
Right.
And I know people love the Cinnamon Bear, and they did a great stage play of it. And I got to tell you, Ben Dooley, who played the Cinnamon Bear and directed it, he did an amazing job. And I was just blown away by it. So that was today at 2 o'clock went awesome. To that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And lastly, before we get back to suspense, I have a question to ask you.
What do you got?
Do you know, or did you hear, I should say, about the guy who stole a Christmas calendar?
I have not.
Yeah, he got 12 months. All right, let's get back to Eddie Cantor in suspense.
Here it is. 1,000, 1,100, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Makes $2,000.
Thanks, Eddie. What you shaking for? Is this your life savings or something?
No, no, no. There's lots more where this came from.
Oh, of course, of course. You're independently wealthy.
Oh, yeah. That's it, Figs. You're a card.
Oh, card. Oh, gee, I almost forgot. Here's my card, and here's your ticket. Now, hang on to it. Might be worth $100,000.
Okay, Fink,
Hey, you all right? You look kind of green.
You've just been looking at too much dough, Fink.
Maybe. You drop around this afternoon about 3. The address is on the card. Your dog is running in. Goodbye, altruism.
So long, Fink.
So long, Eddie.
Hello?
Sullivan, this is Mr. Bartholomew.
Yes, sir.
Speak up.
Yes, sir.
That's better, Sullivan. Sullivan, I want you to send a nice new $100 bill to the Second Street Mission. Put it in a plain envelope and don't write anything with it. Wrap it in a piece of paper so no one will know what it is at the post office. I want to send a nice little anonymous gift as a surprise. A nice, crisp $100 bill.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bartholomew. Second Street Mission. I may send them a little something myself later. Yeah.
Eddie, it's okay. I got by.
What?
I'm clear. That auditor missed it. What's the matter? Aren't you glad?
You mean you ain't going to jail?
Oh, not this year.
Are you sure, Sam?
Positive, Eddie. The auditors are through. Not a chance of getting caught.
Not a chance, Sam?
Not a chance, Eddie.
There could be a slip-up.
No, there couldn't. What's the matter with you? Aren't you glad for me?
Sure. Look, already I'm doing handsprings.
Oh, boy. Of course, it doesn't solve things completely.
You said it.
I'm still short, but that's okay.
Oh, sure.
I'll think of something. I got a whole year. No more unknown benefactors, though.
I'm very glad.
Eddie, I don't quite get it, though. Bartholomew buttering me up. He says, we know everything is in good shape, Sam. No use putting these auditors to any more trouble. Just have them check the cash on hand, and that'll wind it up.
The cash?
Yeah.
Sam, hand me that Dixie cup by the typewriter.
Yeah, sure. You dry?
Very. How are you going to get the $100,000 back in the books?
Oh, I don't know. Why?
Maybe I can raise some dough.
You couldn't raise a Venetian blind. But what are you worrying for? I'm out of a jam.
And I'm in.
What's on your mind?
Just 2 or 3 years, that's all.
And now I suppose you're going to tell me you've been swiping postage stamps.
Oh, no, nothing as bad as that. Look, I'm your pal, Sam.
Well, sure.
I'd do anything for you.
Then talk sense.
I hated to think of you in Sing Sing for 6 months, Sam, so... I'm going there myself for a few years.
What do you say?
I took $2,000 and bet it on a 50-to-1 shot at Tropical Park, Sam.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I did it. Yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
No, tell me you're kidding me, Eddie.
I did it for you, Sam, for Christmas.
What?
A guy don't get a chance to prove his friendship very often.
Friendship? You talk of friendship at a time like this? We're both as good as in Sing Sing right now.
And me the longest.
I hope so. Of all the dumb tricks. And you didn't make any entries, huh?
No. Just took it. Just...
Eddie, how'd you come to bet on a horse? You never made a bet. What bookies do you know?
Here's his card. He just happened in by accident.
A truck should just happen by accident to run over you.
Maybe he'd give it back, Sam.
Oh, sure. Bookies are that way. Philanthropists. All of them. Besides, there's probably no such address as this.
Oh, don't be hard on me, Sam. After all, I risked my own neck to save yours.
No greater love.
And maybe this horse will win.
A 50-to-1?
Well?
Let me see that card. All we can do is try and get the dough back.
He was awful nice, Sam.
Oh, shut up. Nice. Look, fake an entry in the books. Then we'll pay Mr. Fink Freeze a call. Friendship.
Yeah, friendship. We're in this together, pal. On the subway up to the bookie's place, I didn't say a word. I just stared at the ads and kept thinking of how I'd messed things up and wondering what Sam was thinking. The window we sat near had bars on it, and I felt I was already in jail. Well, we got to the bookies. It was a great big large room.
The track is now past at Tropical Park.
Ah, well, if it ain't the millionaire bookkeeper. Hi, Eddie.
Hello there, Fink.
Welcome to our humble joint. Of course, it ain't like Hialeah.
But as close to it as we can get in New York, I know.
This is Sam Crockett, Fink, my friend.
Oh, glad to meet you, Mr. Crockett. Smart man you got working with you. He's going to make himself a pile of dough this afternoon, aren't you, Eddie?
look, fella, this is all a mistake.
Huh?
Eddie had no business betting $2,000 on a horse. The fact is, it wasn't his money.
Well, I am surprised.
You see, he was trying to help someone.
He helped himself to $2,000, huh?
Think, give us a break and return the money. We'll both go to jail if we don't put it back.
Scratch Slowboy number six.
I'm very sorry, fellas, but I can't do nothing. I've turned in the dough. I just work here. I can't get that back.
Well, you've got to help us, Fink.
Look, I'd like to, Crockett, but how can I? This is a business. Now, supposing I ask the boss. He says it's a contract. He can't back out, neither can you. Where would we be if we asked you to take your money back?
Yeah, but don't you see, we'll go to Sing Sing Sing.
2 minutes to post time for the third at Tropical Place. Your bets now, men.
Yeah, maybe those bills were counterfeit. You could tell the cashier the dough's no good, huh?
Now, how can I, Eddie? He can spot a phony from 50 yards.
Look, think. The auditors are checking our books now.
All I can say is I'm very sorry, and I hope this nag wins for you. But I can't do a thing about it.
In the third.
Oh, we're sunk, Eddie.
I'm really sorry, boys. I should have known better than to take your dough.
He sounded like he meant it, Sam.
So what? Come on, let's go.
Ain't you interested in hearing the race over the loudspeaker?
No.
Well, I am. It's me who started this. I'm going to get my money's worth.
Tropical in the third, a correction. Sylvester is riding altruism.
Did you hear that, Sam?
You mean we get a jockey?
Now, don't be funny. This guy Sylvester is hot. He's winning two or three races a day.
Third, they're away at 3:17.
They're off, Sam.
I got ears.
Oh, gosh.
At the quarter, it's Warlarm, Dive Bomber, Calumet Powell, Dunn-In, Westward O, File Clerk, Valiant Ned, Mashy Niblick, Timid Soul, Golden West, Test 2, Box Should Block, Early Riser, and Altruism.
No wonder you got 50 to 1. There's 50 horses.
That's not a race, it's a caravan.
Last place. Now are you satisfied?
Okay, Sam, let's go. Seabiscuit couldn't win in a crowd like that unless he cut across the infield.
Oh, you sure pick him.
Come on, what are you waiting for?
I'm not waiting. Quit pushing me.
Am I pushing you?
Listen.
Valiant Ned by a length. Warlarm is second. Test Tube is third. Dive Bomber fourth. Dunn-In, Calumet Powell, Westward Ho, File Clerk, Timid Soul, Golden West, Early Riser, Mashy Niblick, Altruism, and Auction Block has dropped out.
That nag is taking the pause that refreshes.
Well, he's come up.
If enough drop out, he can win.
Yeah, the race would have to last 2 days, huh?
Why didn't they run it in heats?
Well, might as well hang around till the end, huh, Sam?
Well,
I guess stretch, Valiant Ned is still leading by a length. Test Tube is second. Warlarm is third. And coming up is Altruism.
Did he say Altruism?
He said it. Get the results.
Hey, Porky, how about the finish?
Coming over to line
out, Fink. Sylvester, ride, boy, ride, ride.
No, don't wring your hands. It's too late to pray. The race is over.
Who's the winner?
How do I know? The wire is always a minute behind.
Eddie, we've got a chance. Christmas comes but once a year.
It's too close for comfort. Oh, why did Flint let me take that bet?
The winner of the third at Tropical is Altruism.
No, my horse. Yours, mine. He won. He won. Sam, he won.
No, he won.
He won, Eddie. Well, am I a chump now?
You're a champ, Eddie, a champ.
Oh, it was nothing, Sam.
Only a sap could do it.
Thanks, Sam.
Holy smoke, this does it.
Fink, I almost forgot. You got to fork over the money.
Yeah, that just about busts this joint. Look, how about calling it off?
Remember what you said about contracts?
Well, yeah, if I'd have known they were switching Sylvester on that dog.
Come on, when do we get paid off?
Well, right now, Crockett. Come on over to the cashier.
Cash? Do we have to take cash?
Oh, absolutely. Here, give me your ticket.
Here.
Now, here's the cashier at this window. 100 grand, Speed.
Look, the cashier don't bat an eye. I'm going to take the money.
The cops! It's a race!
How about my dough?
Grab that cashier!
He's going out the back door!
Oh,
cops jugged everyone in the place. Fink and the other gamblers got away with $100,000, and we had to wait until Christmas morning for a hearing, but every silver lining has a rip in it.
Oh, I don't see how they got away. Oh, am I sore. We sit here in the can, and they're off with all that dough.
We were framed, Sam. The whole thing was planned.
Oh, you're crazy. How'd Fink know altruism would win? You can't turn on a police raid like a shower bath.
Well, how are we ever going to find those guys?
We won't. And if we do, it won't do us any good. Because you haven't got the ticket anymore. And even if you had, you couldn't force them to pay because bookmaking isn't legal. It's gambling.
Keep on. I love to hear your ulcer talk. And it fits so nicely with these surroundings.
Well, you might as well get used to it. We'll be living in quarters like this for some time.
Quiet, Sam. Here comes the keeper.
Hmm? And he's got Fink with him.
Good. He deserves to be in jail, the dirty...
Hello, Eddie. I got something for you.
I'm sorry. I'm just not interested in tips or something.
Oh, no, Eddie, you don't understand. I just come to say Merry Christmas. And this is for you, Eddie.
For me?
What is that? Open it, Eddie.
Oh, yeah? Look, Sam, $2,000.
$2,000?
That's right. That's all I got. It's my own dough. Mike Flint blew town, so this is the best I can do, Eddie.
Oh, gee, thanks, Fink. Thanks, you're a prince.
Just call him Santa Claus. So there I was, back where I started, at scratch. All I had to do was to put the dough back in the cash drawer. They made us pay a $10 fine, and we got home in time for Christmas dinner. The next morning, we took the subway downtown. Sam read the paper, and I just stared at the ads as usual.
Eddie, quite a story about altruism. Picture of Sylvester. Just a kid, 19, weighs 105.
Look at that ad. It says to spell it backwards. If they want you to read it that way, why didn't they turn it around?
Yeah. Eddie, look.
I don't know why they... What is it, Sam?
Look, this picture. It's Bartholomew.
Where? They've arrested him. What for?
Embezzlement, Eddie.
But that's you, Sam.
Listen to this. Bartholomew confessed to having embezzled company funds to the tune of $250,000 when auditors discovered a shortage in cash of $2,000. So that's why he was hurrying those guys around.
Let me see.
Look.
What a business. Everyone in it is a crook. Hey, Sam. Sam, where you going?
Back to the police station. I'm giving myself up.
Giving yourself up? But Sam...
No, Betty. I'd never sleep again if I escape scot-free. Besides, I'd like to get away from Alice for 6 months.
But Sam... When nobody was looking, I slipped the $2,000 back into the cash drawer, and Sam went to the police and gave himself up. But guess what? They didn't want him. They already had their man. Sam wrote out a confession, offered to show them the books, but they just laughed at him. Called him a publicity seeker. He pleaded with them, but it was no use. Even Bartholomew called him a fool. Imagine Sam fought for the right to go to prison, and they laughed at him. Then he went to the newspapers, even to the district attorney, explaining what he'd done with the money. But they wouldn't believe him either. That's the thing that finally broke Sam's heart. No one would believe that he was the famous unknown benefactor. They told him, go on, Santa Claus, go back to your reindeer. Sam would have preferred a few quiet months in Sing Sing breaking rocks. He could have got rid of his ulcers. He would have got away from Alice, but no.
Hey, Eddie, hand me that Dixie cup, will you?
Your ulcers bothering you again, Sam?
Yeah, something awful. Keeping ledgers straight is driving me nuts.
Oh, Sam.
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Eddie Cantor with Sidney Miller.
Well, Eddie, suspense is a far cry from your Sunday night take-it-or-leave-it show.
Oh, not so far. There's a lot of suspense when we get to the $64 question.
Well, to make you feel at home here, Eddie, I've prepared a question for you to ask me.
I'll bet I know the category, batteries.
What else?
All right. Where's the question?
Right here on this slip of paper.
Let's see. It reads, is there anything that uses less water than an Autolite staple battery? Now, isn't that a silly question to ask you, Harlow?
Yes, it is, Eddie. The answer is so obvious. Why, Autolite staple batteries need water only 3 times a year in normal car use.
Any more questions?
No, Eddie, and thank you. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. And friends, once again, Merry Christmas to all, and to all, good night. Next Thursday for Suspense, Ida Lupino will be our star. The play is called The Bullet, and it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's Suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Double Entry is an original radio play by Robert Minton.
You can buy Autolite Stay-Full batteries, Autolite resistor or regular spark plugs, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Suspense from December 22nd, 1949, Double Entry, starring Eddie Cantor, sponsored by Autolite. It's heard on CBS. Paul Frees doing the announcing on that show. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. After the news, we'll tune into the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. Good Christmas program from 1949. Then we'll tune into This Is Your FBI from 1950 as well. Good Christmas show. And I have a question for David Jennings. David, I have a very important question to ask you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So, what goes oh, oh, oh? Santa walking backwards.
Ouch. That's so bad. Oh,
I'm all about corny. The cornier, the better. That's why I don't walk a lot, because I have huge corns.
That was bad.
That's bad.
Oh, that was
bad.
Oh,
oh,
oh.
But you're kind of laughing a little bit there. That's the goal, to get you to laugh.
There is a room for you at the Giggly Brooks home for the none too tightly wrapped.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after midnight. Thank you, David Jennings. And this is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, where we play all your favorite classic radio shows. You name it, we have it. Abbott and Costello, Boston Blackie, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, Dragnet, Suspense, Escape, The Whistler, Richard Diamond, Private Detective. How much time do you have, Mike? I can keep going with this.
Yeah. Let's keep it moving.
Yeah, we have the mysteries, the westerns, the comedies, the dramas, like Lux Radio Theater. We have it all here on the WGN Radio Theater. We have over 100,000 classic radio shows, and Mike Gastella, our executive producer, is pinch hitting for Lisa Wolf tonight because she is in Florida. And Mike is the genius behind the sound quality of these shows. When we play a program here, it always sounds fantastic because of Mike's diligence and hard work and special talents.
Thank you.
We appreciate that, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, in this hour, it's the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. And then in hour three, This Is Your FBI. Both shows are Christmas shows, and it's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film The Pact, about three parents who try to stop their daughters from losing their virginities on prom night. And they will win a Twilight Zone radio drama 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Katherine Heigl's sister in Knocked Up.
We come here all the time. It's not a big deal. It doesn't really look that crowded in there.
All right, that's a great actress. I love her. 312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Win some Twilight Zone CDs. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip one more time.
We come here all the time. It's not a big deal. It doesn't really look that crowded in there.
I'm a fan of this actress.
Yeah,
for sure.
She's great.
We have Hillary on the line. Hi, Hillary.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you guys?
Excellent.
Who is that actress?
Leslie Mann.
That is absolutely correct. You've won a Twilight Zone Radio Dramas 4-CD set hosted by Stacy Keach.
Yeah, not bad, right? Right, Hillary?
Pretty exciting considering I turned the radio on about 5 seconds before you asked that question.
Are you kidding me? Where were you the first hour of our show? We needed you.
I was watching Ferdinand on 3D.
Well, you going to listen to the rest? We're here till 2 a.m.
Sounds good. I'll be in the car.
All right, Hillary. We're counting on you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. All right. Hillary's a big winner. And all of our listeners are big winners because we have Phil Harris and Alice Faye up for you now. And, you know, this was a great series. Phil Harris and Alice Faye, they were real-life husband and wife, as you may know that, Mike.
Yep.
They starred in a comedy series that began on NBC Radio in 1948. They played fictionalized versions of themselves as a showbiz working couple raising two daughters. And Phil had a best friend, Elliot Lewis, played him. He was Frankie Remley. And usually Frankie got Phil in a lot of hot water on the show. And then Walter Tetley, who was Leroy on The Great Gildersleeve, was the obnoxious delivery boy Julius Abruzzo. And it lasted on radio until 1954. Very funny series. And, of course, Phil Harris became famous as Jack Benny's orchestra leader.
Right?
Yeah. So, you know, he just he was one of the gang on Jack Benny. And then the NBC offered him his own series. So we have it for you now. It's very funny. It's a Christmas show from December 18th, 1949. They decide to get a Christmas tree. Let's tune into part one of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Good health to all from Rexall. It's the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, presented, transcribed by the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists. Merry Christmas to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Scharf and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. With Christmas just a week off, the Harris family is busily engaged putting a few Yuletide decorations around the house. Alice is hanging a holly wreath in the window, and Phil has just finished hanging some mistletoe over the door.
There. Mistletoe. Ah, Philip, the many girls whose toes you've curled under this little sprig of greenery.
Daddy, what do you call that green stuff you just hung over the door?
Oh, mistletoe, honey. Better known as smooching spinach.
Why do you hang it over the door?
Well, it's like a game, baby Alice. The idea is for a fella to get a girl under the mistletoe and then kiss her.
Did you ever play the game, Daddy?
Did I ever play? I was All-American 12 years in a row.
You mean if a fella gets a girl under the mistletoe, he kisses her? That sounds like a silly game to me.
Don't knock it till you've tried it, gal. And don't try it till you get my permission.
Daddy, before you married Mommy, did you have any girlfriends?
Oh, I had a few. I say a few.
How many?
Well, I don't remember. When I got married, I fired my scorekeeper. You know something? I probably had more girlfriends than
Phil,
you could...
Phil, what are you doing?
Daddy's telling us about all the girls he knew before he met you.
Oh, them. That should make for nice, dull conversation.
Mommy, did you know that Daddy used to go out with other girls?
Oh, of course I knew we went out with other girls. I say girls. I never knew what a girl was supposed to look like until he met me. Now, look, Father, stop bragging about your former...
Hello there, where is everybody? Oh, hello there. Good morning, children. Howdy doody, Philip.
Howdy doody, oh, you dimpled darling, you. You know, sometimes, Willie, you're so cute, I
Philip,
could just...
Philip, stop chucking me under the chin.
I ain't chucking you under the chin. I'm groping for your windpipe.
You have your decorations up, Alice, and they look wonderful. The holly and the berries. What's that green stuff hanging in the doorway there?
That's mistletoe.
What do you hang that up for?
What do you... Oh, this kid really lives. Why, I don't know, but he does. Look, Willie, you're supposed to get a girl under... Look. Didn't your father ever tell you about the birds and the bees?
Naturally. Birds. A bird is a warm-blooded, feathered, egg-laying vertebrate commonly known as the avian sauropsidan.
Huh?
Bees. A bee is a honey-gathering hymenopterous insect of the genus Apis.
All right, Willie, all right, all right.
Philip, that's the scientific definition of the birds and the bees.
Well... I must have a talk with my father. Papa is away off the beam. Does your brother always
have... I also
have...
know about fish.
Now, shut up!
Willie, do you really like our decorations?
Oh, Alice, the beautiful. And I'm glad to see that you people are imbued with the Christmas spirit. That's more than I can say for our city fathers. Where's the big community tree they always have in front of City Hall? I ask you, where is it?
Well, don't look at me. I ain't got it.
No, you're right, Willie. I wonder why they don't have the tree up this year.
That's what I'm going to find out. I'm on my way down to City Hall right now to get to the bottom of this. I'll go in and I won't come out till I know the whys and the wherefores.
What did he say?
He said he's going in on his why and coming out on his where.
You know, Willie, you're right. We should have a community tree, and I'm going to the city hall with you. You're coming too, Phil. If enough people protest, we'll get results.
But, Alice, I can't go. I've got a date with Frankie.
Well, we'll pick him up and take him too.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't know if I'm in favor of this. Gee whiz, in order to put a tree up, you got to chop one down.
What's wrong with that?
I don't believe in it. You see, I've an affinity for our little green brothers. And if you'll lend me your big flapping ears, I'll proceed to tell you why. There is a tree grows near our house. It's been there quite some time. Now the tree is a slippery elm tree, and awful hard to climb. But when my wife gets after me, in that tree I always roost. Why, I can go right up it just like a healthy squirrel. I don't never need no boost. But the other day, a woodman came round to chop my refuge down. Kept mumbling something about breaking it up into kindling wood and then spreading it around the town. I said to him, I said, look here, my friend. Hold on, wait, desist, whoa, stop. Put down that forest razor. Chop not a single chop. Woodman, woodman, spare that tree. Touch not a single bough. 3 years it has protected me, and I'll protect it now. Now go chop an oak, get a birch or pine. But save old Slippery there, that's mine. That's the only tree my wife can't climb, Mr. Woodman. It's bad for me. I went further than that. I said, Woody, can you see that hole way up near that old treetop? That's the one. I got $5 in soft money hid up there, and it's yours if you refuse to chop.
Now, you see, no one can climb that tree but me. Because really, friend, it's too slippery. Fact is, I can't get up there very well myself unless my wife is after me. So you go home and get my little woman and bring her here, and I'm going to proceed to call her a very naughty word. Then all you have to do, Mr. Woodman, is stand by incognito while I do that perfect imitation of a bird. Now, you ain't going to know just where I go. That is, while my wife's around. But the only thing I ask you, Mr. Woodman, the only thing I ask you, if you don't see me here on the ground, Woody, you gonna spare that tree. Touch not a single bough, because I'm gonna be up there and I'll drop old five down to thee, the one I promised thou. But you must make that axe behave, because old Slippery there just must be saved. Man, that's a borderline twixt me and the grave. Mr. Woodman, Woody, spat. Please spat for me. Frankie, you've been beefing all the way down to the city hall. What's the matter?
I got a right to beef. You're all very inconsiderate. Dragging me out of a warm, homey pool room. But if you want a tree, I'll talk to the mayor. He don't make a move without me. I'm here to see him every day.
Hey, you know Mayor Baldwin?
Intimately. We're old friends. I call him Baldy, and he calls me... You wouldn't think a man in his position would use that kind of language.
I see he knows you well.
Yeah.
Look, Remley, I tell you, on thinking it over, you'd better wait here, and we'll go in and see him without you, huh? We'll be back.
Well, here's the mayor's office. Now then, let's all go in together and assert ourselves. Pardon me, are you the mayor?
Yes, yes, come right in. Always glad to see the public. Make yourselves at home. Sit down, take your coats off, have a cigar. I suppose you're here to see me about the coming elections.
Coming elections? Mr. Mayor, you've just been elected. You're all set for the next 2 years.
I am? All right, stand up, put your coats on, and give me back those two cigars. What's the idea of barging into my office like this?
Mr. Mayor, we came in to see you about a Christmas tree.
Why didn't you say so? I have some very nice trees. What size do you want? I sell them by the foot. Always like to make a side buck or two. I'm an expert. I know all about trees.
Well, that's a coincidence. We have a boy here who knows all about birds, bees, and fish. Go ahead, Willie. Tell him about the birds.
Birds. A bird is a warm-blooded, feathered...
Okay, well, that's enough. That's enough. Don't tell him all you know. Let him ask his own father. Mr. Mayor, we want to know why the community Christmas tree isn't up this year.
Yes, you're a disgrace to your office. Your incompetence is something...
Look, just a moment. How dare you talk like that to a man in my esteemed position? Why, I'm a man of integrity, and you two are nothing but riffraff.
Now, just a minute, bud.
Quiet, Riff. I'm talking to Raff.
Mr. Mayor, why don't we have a tree this year?
Well, I'm sorry, madam, but it slipped our minds, and I'm afraid it's too late to put through an appropriation.
Well, isn't there something you can do about it? Please?
No, Alice, don't ask him. Demand it. Mr. Mayor, we are the taxpayers who put you in office. We pay your salary, and you're working for us.
Oh, nuts. They always get me with that corny line. What did I ever do to deserve a job like this?
No, Mr. Mayor, we're sorry.
Well, most people work for one boss and only take orders from him, but not me. I work for every crumb bum that comes into this office with a beef. Just because I'm the only Republican in the country in office, everybody picks on me.
All right, that's the first portion of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show from December 18th, 1949. I love Phil Harris and Alice Faye. They're just hysterical, don't you think?
I agree with you on that.
And you know, it's getting cold out, and even though today was kind of nice, 40 degrees or so, it's going to get cold for Christmas. And you know what's the best thing when it's cold out?
What's that?
Heat holders. Do you know that heat holders is the best way to keep yourself warm this winter? Heat holders makes the warmest socks. They keep your feet warmer than just ordinary socks in the coldest conditions. And how do they do it? Well, heat holders uses a three-stage process with a cashmere-like advanced insulating yarn that's soft to the touch and brushed on the inside, trapping warm air closer to your skin, keeping your feet warmer, comfortable, and dry, making heat holders the softest and most comfortable socks guaranteed. Heat holders will pamper your feet. Heat holders also makes hats, gloves, throws, scarves, and much more. Give someone you love heat holders for the holidays. Go to heatholders.com and use the code WGN. Save 15% off your order. Receive free shipping with any purchase of $25 or more. Remember to go to heatholders.com. Use the code WGN. That's heatholders.com. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, after the news, it's the conclusion to the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show. Then we're going to tune into a true crime story on This Is Your FBI. But before we go to the news, I have to ask Roger a quick question. Roger, it's very important. These are very important questions I'm asking.
I'm sure they are, and I will do my best.
All right.
I will endeavor to assess the answer.
All right. Well, it's, I mean, these life or death situations.
I know.
The world is on the line here.
Oh, man, you put a lot of pressure on me.
A lot of pressure. Right. What do reindeer say before they tell a joke? This will slay you.
I'm sorry. So what was the question again? Oh, my bad.
The question is...
thank you very much.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We had the very fun WGN Christmas party. It was a holiday extravaganza on Friday. Hopefully our listeners got to hear that. It was very fun. It was a radio play, and it had to do with classic radio. It was sort of a takeoff on the War of the Worlds with a Christmas theme. Hope you had a chance to hear it. If not, I'm sure it's podcast.
It's actually on the website, so you can just go right to the WGN radio website and click on the link, and they're going to hear your dulcet tones and Lisa's and everybody else who appeared in that.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really well done, and there was great music. There was singing. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
Wait, they let you sing?
Well, I didn't. Lisa sang, actually.
Yeah.
She sang a cigarette commercial.
Oh,
it was
really?
Very funny. The whole thing was just great. And, you know, pretty much, I would say most people that are at the station were in it. It was a lot of fun. And so you can just go to the website and click it and hear it, right?
Yep.
Oh, very, very cool. Okay, thanks.
But don't do it while your show's on.
Oh, gosh, no.
No.
Are
please.
You kidding me?
I just wanted, in case somebody got a little crazy out there.
No, please.
And said, hey, let me
click.
No.
No. That you do, I don't know. Well, you know, we're on 24 hours a day. You'd have to not listen to somebody, but just don't let it be us.
Right.
Right?
There you go. Yeah.
Do you have your shopping done for the holidays?
Yeah. If you can call not shopping, then yeah.
Well, I am a large, and sometimes if it's like a Donna Karen, I go with an extra large because they run small. I'm a 9.5 shoe.
Okay.
Do like shoes.
Left or right?
One of each. Yeah, one of each, generally. I mean, I'm trying to think what else would I like. I wouldn't mind a...
Donna Karen, DK?
Yeah, Donna Karen.
Yeah, DK. Don't know if I'm going to get anything
for
you.
Yeah, no? What are you going to want? What did you say I should do? DK?
D... Hello.
Is that what you're trying to tell me? all right. Well, we're listening to one of the funniest. I know you like Phil Harris.
I do. It's one of my favorites.
Just so funny, right?
Yes.
I mean, it holds up well today, 50, 60 years later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to this Christmas show, December 18th, 1949, the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Mr. Mayor, control yourself. Will you control your... And stop crying, you're wetting your dewy button.
Well, it's enough to drive a man crazy. Everybody's always coming in here asking for favors, favors, favors.
What's taking you people so long? Oh, hiya, Baldy.
No, Remley, not you again. How many times do I have to tell you we can't keep the saloons open all night?
I'm not here for that.
Oh, you must be lobbying for your uncle again. Now look, Remley, I've told you and I've told your uncle. I cannot give him a license to steal.
Frankie. Your uncle wants a license to steal?
Yeah. The only way he can be law-abiding and still make a living.
Mr. Mayor, if we buy a tree, will you allow us to put it up?
Certainly, if you can find a 30-foot tree, it's okay with me, but I don't know where you're going to buy one that size at this late date.
Oh, we don't have to buy one. I know exactly where to get one. I saw a lot of them up in the San Bernardino Mountains last week when I was there sheeing.
I'll leave it to him to pronounce it that way.
There and get a tree. Might be fun to spend a day in the snow, huh?
Okay, okay. While Willie is sheeing in the snow, you and I can go ice shading on the lake. I love to ice shade. Let's do it. We can get Julius's delivery truck to bring the tree back. Hey, Rem, come on up with us, will you?
No, thanks. I'm not a cold weather man.
Now, wait a minute. I hear the lake's frozen over and we can do a little ice skating.
Sorry, Curly. Once you take ice away from ginger ale, it loses all its sex appeal.
True.
Besides, I don't like cold weather.
Now, wait a minute. You won't mind it if you dress warm. Look, you go home and get all the heavy clothes that you can find, and then meet me at Julius's. And Alice, you better dress warm, too, because I hear they're having some storms up there.
Oh, as long as you're with me, Phil, I won't have to dress warm.
What do you mean, and why are the musicians picking up their instruments?
The snow is snowing, the wind is blowing, but I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. I can't remember a worse December. Just watch those icicles form. What do I care if icicles form? I've got my love to keep me warm. Off with my overcoat, off with my gloves. I need no overcoat, I'm burning with love. My heart's on fire, the flame grows higher. So I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
Off with my overcoat, off with my gloves. I need no overcoat, I'm burning with love.
My heart's on fire, the flame.
flame grows higher, so I will weather the storm.
What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
I wonder where Frankie is. He was supposed to meet me here at the market, and the guy is
Hiya,
always...
Hiya, Curly.
Oh, hello, Remley. It's mm-hmm. about time you showed up. We got to get stuck. What do you got on?
Few warm clothes for the snow country. Two suits of long underwear, four sweaters, a lumber jacket, a Mackinaw, a parka, a coonskin cap, and a raccoon coat over the whole thing. How do I look?
Like a blob of hairy blubber. Look, what have you got in that case strapped around your waist?
Batteries? My red flannels are electrically heated.
All that stuff in electric underwear? Aren't you a little overheated?
No. I ain't plugged in.
And another thing, Remley, you got that coonskin cap on wrong. The tail's supposed to be in the back. Oh, Remley, you didn't have to put all that stuff on until we got... Oh, never mind. There's Julius. Hey, I've got to ask you if you'll loan us his truck. Hey, Julius!
Hi, Mr. Harris.
Hi, kid.
Well, if it ain't a nook and a nought. Hey, Mr. Harris, what's Klondike Clyde dressed up for?
Well, we're going up to the snow country, and he's prepared for it.
Oh. Looking thing hanging down in front of his face.
That's his nose.
I mean, that other ridiculous looking thing.
That's a tail.
Oh. And his face is very becoming.
Yeah, from the front, he looks like a sheepdog from the back.
Oh, I am just convulsed by this hilarious routine, huh? What's the matter with you guys? You'd think you never saw somebody wearing a nose muff before.
What are you going up to the snow country for?
Well, we're going up to get a community tree for the town, and, well, we want to borrow your delivery truck to bring it back. Julius, can we have it?
What kind of a question is that? For such a noble cause to help humanity... To bring Yuletide cheer to my fellow townsmen, I'd have to be the lowest kind of heel to refuse permission for you gentlemen.
All right, never mind your speech, never mind. Where are the keys to the truck?
In my pocket, but you might have a little trouble getting up to the mountains.
Why?
I ain't gonna lend you the truck.
But you just made a big speech about noble causes. What was that for?
Self-talk. I'll lend you the truck if I do the driving.
Okay, you can do the driving. Now, come on, will you? We got to pick up Mrs. Harris and Willie, and then, fellas, we're off to the mountain.
Can't we just chop down one of these small trees?
No, we're not going to give up. Now, we came up here to get a great big tree, and that's what we're going to get.
Oh, but Phil, the snowstorm is getting worse. Let's get back to the truck. I'm freezing.
That's the trouble with you women. You can't take it. I'd like to keep you warm, but I don't know how.
Well, it might help if you gave me back my fur coat.
Oh. Well, if you want to be selfish, take it. Here. Ooh. Hey, you're right. It's freezing without that coat. How do you feel, Frankie?
Very comfy. I just plugged myself in. My thermostat says I'm 78. I'll turn it up to 85.
Phil, please, let's get back to the truck. Phil.
Huh?
Do you smell smoke?
Yeah, I do. Frankie, it's coming from you.
From me?
Yeah.
How do you like that? I got a short circuit in my red flannels.
Oh, we've got to get out of here. I'm freezing.
I'm freezing, too.
I'm sweating. Maybe I better turn down the damper on my underwear.
Frankie, will you be quiet a minute? I'm freezing to death. Oh, Alice, I might as well confess. I hate to tell you this, but, honey, we're lost. I don't know where we are.
Well, what are you worrying about? If we're not back at the truck soon, Willie and Julius will come looking for us.
Yeah, but suppose they get here late. It's getting colder every minute. We're lost in this bleak, desolate wilderness, and I'm freezing. Freezing. Do you hear me? Freezing.
Huh? What are you getting excited about? Take it easy.
How can I? I'm starting to get numb and my feet are frozen. Look at my little ankles. They're blue. My ankles are blue.
Those are your socks. Nothing wrong with your feet.
I say there is something wrong. My leg is frozen stiff. Look, Frankie, I'm pinching it and there's no feeling in it. Why is there no feeling in my leg?
Maybe it's because it's my leg you're pinching.
Well, this is a fine time for that.
He's right, honey. Drag it out of the way. Now, look, kids, don't worry because I'm going to get you out of this. And Alice, honey, control yourself. Don't get hysterical. Please don't get hysterical.
I'm not hysterical.
Don't argue with me. And as for you, Remley, will you keep calm and stop blubbering like a baby?
Who's blubbering? I'm happy as a bird dog.
Don't change the subject. Now, wait a minute, Frankie. Get a grip on yourself because we're a couple of big, strong men and it's up to us to rescue this frail woman.
You're right. Let's get this frail out of here.
Oh, we all got lost. Frankie passed out, and I had to drag him for a half a mile.
How's Philip? Is he all right?
Lift him off my back and see.
Oh, for goodness sake. Julius, give me a hand.
All that trouble, and we didn't even get a tree.
Oh, well, we got one. Julius and I found a big one right near where we parked the truck.
Oh. Oh, where are we? What happened?
You're all right, Philip, and don't worry, I'm here.
You I don't need. Where's the dog with the brandy?
Hey, I need a drink, too. Pass the St. Bernard around.
I got something to warm you up. Here, Mr. Emily, take a short swig of this.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough, Mr. Remley. I said that's enough. Let go of the bottle!
Julius, that stuff's terrific. And I ought to know because I'm a judge of good liquor. What's the name of it?
Antifreeze!
Poison, I'm dying!
Now, take it easy, Remley. Take it easy. Don't get excited. Take it easy. You'll owe me. Look at him boil over! We're a little late, so good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
This program was produced and transcribed by Paul Phillips. Be happy on Christmas Day. Eliminate the rush and worry, the disappointments of last-minute Christmas shopping. Tomorrow, take your gift list to your Rexall Family Druggist. His store is filled with distinctive, sure-to-please gifts for the home, for the children, for the entire family. Gifts it's a pleasure to give, economical to buy. Look for the store with the orange and blue Rexall sign on the window. This week, it's headquarters for Just Right, Price Right Christmas Gift.
Stay tuned for Sam Spade, then Maurice Evans on Theater Guild on NBC.
There's a very funny Phil Harris and Ellis Faye show. December 18th, 1949, getting a Christmas tree. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, you know what, Mikey?
What's that?
I will be back here on Wednesday at 8 p.m. I'm going to be Justin Kaufman's guest on The Download. I will be on for an hour from 8 till 9 with Justin. We're going to talk about classic radio, play some clips, and have some fun. And he's going to talk to me about my book. My book that I that came out November 1st. It's called The Top 100 Classic Radio Shows, and it has been doing really well. I'm so so happy to say it's been selling, and people have been buying it and are so nice. They text me after they get it and tell me they enjoy it. It's a big coffee table book, as you know. You have one. Is it on your coffee table?
It's not on my coffee table.
What? Was it by your bed? It's because you're reading it every night?
It's in my office.
Okay.
And I spend the most time in my office, so I see it every day for several hours.
Yeah, very good. You know, I've been sending so many, mailing so many of these things that the post office, they are not happy when I come in there with a big kind of hand cart. But they're very nice. But I gave the gal Linda, I gave her a book. I signed it to her because this poor lady, she's like stabbing these things and putting the postage on them. And she's so nice. And I go in there with, with, you know, 30 of these books at a time. And she's just like, oh, wow. You
Maybe you can. Maybe you can take like a couple in the morning, a couple in the afternoon, and a couple at night.
Yeah,
that
but
way you can spread the word
out. I know, but it's like a... Roger, could you
imagine?
You
meet more people that way, too.
Yeah, it's true. Can you imagine working at the post office, and here I come, you know, once every couple of days?
Well, if you're carrying 30 books like that, they're wondering, they can't even see you because the pile is taller than you.
And it's a bit, it's such a big book, you know, that
is
one,
very thick,
one box. It's, but anyway, it's just fun. So I gave her one, and I just felt badly, you know, that I keep coming in there. I'm like, it's me again. I'm so sorry. But she's so
but
sweet.
I bet she loves to see you.
She's so sweet. Yeah. Roger, I'll be on Justin Kaufman's show at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9 this Wednesday.
That's great.
Talking old-time radio, talking about the book, and maybe we'll give a couple of books away.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, to someone who's who is listening
at
8 o'clock on Wednesday. So please tune it in. We'll be talking classic radio, which is my favorite subject.
Are you going to play a few samples?
Play some samples.
Okay, that'd be cool.
Yes, we will. All right, in our next hour, it's This Is Your FBI Good Christmas Show, a true story.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Well, this is definitely not Lisa Wolf in front of me here. It's Mike Costella.
Yes, it is.
So Lisa's out in Florida.
Yeah.
She's sleeping right now. She texted me and said,
Give her a call.
Yeah, she texted me. She said, I'm going to bed now, but, you know, pretty good. She gave us a kind of a thumbs up, three-quarter thumbs up for... you know, and
fair enough.
Yeah. So, Roger, I was in L.A. last week, and no, this is not a joke.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I promise you, it's not a joke.
Mike, you got to warn me on these things, buddy. Come on.
He put his hand on his head. He was like, "Okay, here's another joke." No, I was actually in Los Angeles last week doing some biz out there, and so I'm with my friend Marshall Allman, who was on Prison Break, and he was on. Humans. He was on Humans last season. Real great guy. And we're sitting in this restaurant called Sugarfish in Beverly Hills. And I was looking at him, and there was a wall, so I couldn't see who was in the restaurant. And so in the middle of the lunch, he says, "Don't turn around. Don't turn. You know, it'll be too obvious."
Right.
But pretty much 5 feet from you, eating all by herself, nobody bothering her, is Charlize Theron. So, of course, had to get up and, you know, use the men's room right at that moment.
Yeah, sure.
You know? And so I got up, and sure enough, there she was in all her glory.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron. And nobody was bothering her. It was great. You know, she was just sitting there having her, eating her sushi. And she looked absolutely gorgeous, very tall.
Was she, like, wearing sunglasses or a hat or something, trying to look inconspicuous?
No, she kind of had, you know, not a lot of makeup on. She just looked great. And I smiled at her, and she smiled back. So Charlize Theron.
Must have been the sushi.
It must have been the sake, you mean.
Hello.
Yeah, she smiled back. So Charlize Theron smiled at me.
That.
I have a new, you know,
new best
feather in
smiling
my cap.
Friend,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, pretty exciting stuff.
Well, did you friend her on Facebook? Or,
yeah.
Oh, you don't do that.
No,
social media.
But I don't do the social media, but it was...
Well, have your people call her people.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
There you
exactly.
Go.
I'm sure. Oh, my God.
I'll give her a call tomorrow for you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Well, in this hour, this is your FBI, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film A Quiet Place, about a family living on a farm who is terrorized by supernatural evil. And they're going to win a 4-CD set, Twilight Zone radio dramas, hosted by Stacey Keach.
Very good. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Jim on The Office.
Okay, whoa. All right, because that's a pretty intense accusation.
Yeah.
How do you know that they're fake?
All right, who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is the WGM Radio Theater, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip one more time.
Okay, whoa. All right, because that's a pretty intense accusation.
Yeah.
How do you know that they're fake?
All right, we have Jason on the line. Jason, how you doing?
Good, Carl. How are you?
This is Mike, actually. But,
yeah. Well, hey, Mike. Actually, hey. I'll be Mike, and then you can be Carl.
Sure. No, I don't want to be Carl.
I'm sure you don't. Nobody wants to be me. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
All right. Who is that actor?
That is John Krasinski.
It is, and you even said his name right. Wow.
You're going to get a Twilight Zone Radio Dramas 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach.
Yes, you are.
Cool.
All right,
all
buddy.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
Merry
you.
Christmas to you. Thanks, Jason. All right, he's a big winner. It's hour three. Thanks for staying up late with us, and it is time now for an episode of This Is Your FBI. But, Mike, I have a question for you.
What do you
Very
got?
Very important question. What is the best Christmas present? Any idea?
A winning lottery ticket.
Well, that would be good. But actually, no, the best present is a broken drum because you can't beat it. Roger's shaking his head up there. All right, it's time for This Is Your FBI. It's an FBI drama series. It was fact-based, and it dramatized closed FBI cases from the agents' points of view, and it was created, produced, and directed by Jerry Devine of Mr. District Attorney fame. And this series had the full endorsement of J. Edgar Hoover. He really liked this show. It followed the adventures of Agent Jim Taylor, and the action shifted between the agents and then the criminals and back to the agents. Very well done. It aired a long time, 1945 all the way to 1953 over ABC Radio. And it always starred Stacey Harris as Jim Taylor, and it was always sponsored by the same sponsor, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of America. I don't know what that is,
well,
actually.
Well, we're going to hear some commercial spots on
that. Yeah, Life Assurance, whatever that is. Let's tune this in. It's a broadcast from December 22nd, 1950, Christmas show called The Return of St. Nick. Here is part one of This Is Your FBI.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This is your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. presented transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Tonight, one of our Equitable Society representatives has a brief but important message on Social Security.
The recent changes in the Social Security law mean 10 million new people are now covered for the first time. Others have had their benefits greatly increased. Considering these changes, this Christmas season is a particularly good time to take a fresh look at your future.
Tonight, FBI file number 298. Its subject, the Christmas season. Its title, The Return of Saint Nick.
The United States is a young country in the family of nations, but already it has its share of national holidays. Holidays that belong to these 48 states. Those holidays are spaced from February to November. And of every one of those days, it can be said that they belong to the people of the United States exclusively. But there is one legal holiday observed in this country that does not belong to us exclusively, any more than it belongs to any nation. Christmas. Tonight's program, based on the holiday theme, has, by your requests, become almost a tradition in our series. It opens in an FBI field office located in a large eastern city. It is 2 days before Christmas, and Special Agent Jim Taylor has just entered the office of Agent in Charge Sheridan.
Morning, Jim.
Good morning, sir. I got my report here on the Henderson case.
Oh, fine. Just leave it on my desk, will you? Well, you're officially on leave, aren't you, Jim?
Yes, sir, as of this morning. But I wanted to hand this in before I left.
No. You going out of town for the holiday?
That's right, sir. Flying home this afternoon.
Good. How long since you've been home on Christmas?
Oh, 3 years.
Well, have a nice trip, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
And a very Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Mister.
Yes, what is it, son?
Where's the FBI?
It's right down there at the end of the hall.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wait a minute. What do you want with the FBI, son?
Well, we've got some trouble, and I thought they could help us.
Well, I'm a special agent. You think I could help?
Are you a G-man?
That's right. What kind of trouble do you have?
Santa Claus is missing.
That is trouble.
His name is Mr. Norton, and we've got to find him. We've looked all over.
Who looked all over?
All of us older fellas at the settlement house. We went every place.
All of you older fellas, huh? How old are you, son?
I'll be 10 next month.
I see.
Can you help us, mister?
Well, I don't know. But I'll tell you what we'll do first. Let's go downstairs and get an ice cream soda, and you can tell me the whole story.
This is the settlement house, Mr. Taylor.
That's a nice-looking building.
Here, we go in this door.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Williams' office is in there. He's a nice man.
I'm sure he is. This door here?
Yes, but first we must knock.
Come in.
Hello, Mr. Williams.
Hello, Eddie.
This is Mr. Taylor.
How do you do, Mr. Taylor?
Glad to meet you, sir.
Mr. Taylor is a G-man.
He is?
Yes. I got him to help us find Mr. Norton.
Oh, I see.
I've got to run now. Choir practice starts in 10 minutes.
All right, Eddie, you go ahead. I'll explain everything to Mr. Taylor.
I'll see you later, Eddie.
Okay, Mr. Taylor.
I'm sorry you were bothered by Eddie, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, it's no bother at all, Mr. Williams. Eddie made me feel genuinely concerned.
I'm sure he did. We're all very concerned about Mr. Norton.
Well, if there's anything at all I can do, unofficially, of course, I'd be very happy to.
That's very nice of you.
What happened to this Mr. Norton? Who is he?
Well, Pop Norton has worked here at the settlement house longer than anyone can remember. I've been here 15 years, and he was here when I came.
I see. How old would you say he is?
Well, I'd guess around 60 or 65. Mm-hmm.
And his job?
Nothing in particular. He did odd jobs around the house in return for his room and board and a few dollars a month. The biggest job he had was being Santa Claus every year at the Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
Every child in the house was crazy about him, and he loved every one of them in return.
Eddie said he was missing. Is that true?
Yes. I have no idea where he could have gone.
What made him leave?
That's the odd part of it. No one seems to know. Yesterday, he sent in one of the boys with a note to me saying he was leaving immediately.
I see.
I went to his room and he was gone. I'm afraid it's not going to be much of a Christmas for the children without Pop.
Well, Mr. Williams, do you mind if I take a look around his room?
Well, not at all.
Maybe I can find something there that will lead us to where Santa Claus is hiding. Mr. Williams, may I see you for a moment?
Oh, certainly. Keep singing, boys.
God rest ye merry gentlemen.
Did you find anything in Mr. Norton's room, Mr. Taylor?
No, not a thing. Room was cleaned up. Tell me, what do you know about Mr. Norton? What did he do on his day off? Who were his friends?
Well, he never took a day off that I can remember.
Oh?
The only pleasure he got out of life, besides serving the kids, was reading. He always had three or four books from the library down the street.
Well, I have a hunch Mr. Norton isn't going to be too difficult to find.
Why do you say that?
Well, from what you've told me, he's a man of about, 60, with no outside interests. Only thing he likes are reading and children. That kind of a man doesn't usually run very far.
Pardon me. All right, boys, you can rest a while. Sorry, Mr. Taylor, please go on.
Well, I was about to say that I think he's probably still here in the neighborhood.
Mr. Taylor? Oh, Mr. Taylor.
Hello, Eddie.
Excuse me.
What is it, Eddie?
I've been working on the case.
Ah, good for you. What did you find?
I spoke to a boy who saw Pop just before he left.
Well, that's fine, Eddie. What did he say?
He told me that he was playing with Pop yesterday when two ladies came into the gym.
Two ladies?
Yes. Pop saw him and he went and hid in a closet until they went away.
When was this, Eddie?
Just before milk.
Just before milk?
Well, that's at 4 o'clock. They all get milk and cookies.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you, Eddie. You've been a big help.
Well, you're welcome, Mr.
Oh, no, stay here a minute, Eddie. I've got another job for you.
Gee, thanks.
Mr. Williams, do you know these two women who came here yesterday?
One of them was a Mrs. Chester. She's on the Board of Governors. She brought a wealthy friend of hers to try to interest her in contributing to the house.
I see. And do you know this friend's name?
No, I don't. But I can find it out for Mrs. Chester.
I'd appreciate you doing that. Eddie, you ready for your assignment?
Oh, yes, sir. Anything.
All right. I want you to go to the library down the street and see if Mr. Norton is there.
Yes, sir.
And if he's not there, you wait around for him. I think he might come in for some new books. Mr. Sheridan, may I see you a minute?
Why, certainly, Jim. Come on in. I thought you'd be on your way home by now.
So did I.
Oh, what happened?
Well, when I left your office this morning, a young boy stopped me in the hall and asked me for some help.
Yeah? Well, what kind of help?
Well, he belongs to the Murray Street Settlement House, and it seems that their Santa Claus has disappeared. He wanted us to find him. I went back with him, and I talked to the head of the house.
Well, what's the story?
Well, this Mr. Norton has worked at the Settlement House for, about 30 years, and then yesterday he suddenly quit.
Why?
Well, nobody seems to know, sir, except that he saw two women come in, and he hid in a closet until they left, and he packed his belongings and disappeared.
I see.
I know this isn't our case, sir, but, well, I'd like to ask a favor.
What is it?
We have no picture of this man, sir, and I'd like to have an artist go over to the Settlement House, talk to the kids, and make up a composite picture of Mr. Norton.
Well, what do you want that for?
Well, I have a hunch that Mr. Norton's still in the neighborhood. I'd like to circulate the picture and see if we can't get him back to the Settlement House in time to be Santa Claus again this year.
Well, now, what about your trip home, Jim?
Oh, it can wait a day. I don't mind.
All right. Go ahead. We'll find an artist, and more than that, you can use any facilities we've got.
Thank you very much.
Sheridan speaking.
Is Mr. Taylor there?
Yes, just a moment. It's for you, Jim.
Oh, thank you, sir. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, hello, Mr. Williams.
I've got that information for you.
Oh, that's fine.
The woman with Mrs. Chester yesterday was a Mrs. Norman Montgomery. She lives at 310 North Jackson Avenue.
Mrs. Norman Montgomery, 310 North Jackson. Thank you very much, Mr. Williams.
She must have been the one Pop was afraid of.
Oh, why do you say that?
Well, Mrs. Chester's been on friendly terms with Pop for 15 years.
Oh, I see. Oh, Mr. Williams, I'm sending an artist over. I'd appreciate you letting him talk to all of the children so that he can make up a composite picture of Mr. Norton for us.
We'll do anything we can to help, Mr. Taylor.
Fine. He should be there in about, half an hour.
All right. Oh, wait a minute. Eddie wants to talk to
all
you.
All right.
Here he is.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Hello, Eddie. What did you find out?
Nothing. I went to the library, like you said, but Pop never came.
Well, you go back there, Eddie, and keep watching. Don't give up so easily.
All right, Mr. Taylor. I'll go back right now.
Attaboy. And, Eddie, you tell all of your friends up there that if it's at all possible for the FBI to find Santa Claus, we'll have him there tomorrow night for that party.
Mm-hmm. Just a moment, please.
Mrs. Montgomery?
Yes?
My name is Taylor. I'm from the FBI.
What can I do for you, Mr. Taylor?
Well, I'd like to come in and talk to you, if you don't mind.
Well, come in.
Thank you.
What is it you want?
Well, I'm checking up on something, and I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Oh, what sort of questions?
Well, the first one would be, were you at the Murray Street Settlement House yesterday?
Oh, yes, I was, with a Mrs. Chester. What has that to do with you?
Well, it has nothing to do with me, Mrs. Montgomery, but it might have something to do with the man who disappeared.
What are you talking about?
Well, this man who disappeared seemed to be afraid of being seen by you, according to what I can gather.
What?
Well, that's merely a theory, Mrs. Montgomery.
Why would he be afraid of me?
Well, that's what we don't know.
Who is this man?
Well, this is a composite picture made by one of the artists in our office. There you are. Do you recognize him?
Yes, I do. I haven't seen or talked with him in 30 years, but I know him.
Oh, who is he?
He's my brother, Kenneth.
Why would your own brother try to avoid you?
He had a good reason.
What's that, Mrs. Montgomery?
Kenneth is a common thief.
We will return in just a minute to tonight's exciting case from the official files of your FBI.
Now, a short announcement from the Equitable Life Assurance Society on its famous fact-finding chart for fathers and mothers.
This year, there has been an unprecedented demand for this fact-finding chart. Our revised 1950 edition is practically exhausted. So, better make a note to ask your Equitable Society representative for your copy right away. Remember, this 1950 edition of the chart has been revised to take into account the recent changes in the Social Security Act.
These changes mean that the Social Security benefits of 35 million Americans have been increased 50 to 100%, and the names of an additional 10 million of our citizens have been added to the Social Security rolls.
All right, there you go. That's the first portion of This Is Your FBI. From December 22nd, 1950, The Return of St. Nick, starring Stacey Harris. Quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Mike, do you like the true crime stories like This Is Your FBI and Gangbusters?
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to made-up stories, you like the true ones?
Yes.
Well, this is a true story. This really happened. It was taken from the closed cases of the FBI. It's called The Return of St. Nick. Here is the conclusion now of This Is Your FBI.
And now back to the FBI file, The Return of St. Nick.
Hate is a vicious emotion which feeds upon itself and becomes greater as time goes on. It utterly destroys every person it possesses, because it ruins their judgment by robbing them of their ability to see both sides of any question. Ultimately, it must warp the mind to such a degree that only a paramount shock can restore any degree of mental balance. No one person can prevent a war between nations, but every one of you can make this a much finer holiday season for yourself by resolving to live your life with full respect for the rights of every other human being on the face of the earth. Tonight's file continues in the apartment of Mrs. Montgomery.
Mr. Taylor, I assume that your business with me is concluded.
Yes, I'm afraid it is, Mrs. Montgomery, and I'm sorry, because you're the one person I hope could help us find your brother.
What do you want to find him for? To arrest him?
Oh, no, indeed, no. No, until his disappearance, he worked at the Murray Street Settlement House, and the children there love him. It's very important to them that he be found so that he can play Santa Claus at their Christmas party.
Well, I haven't seen him for 30 years. I have no idea where he might be, and frankly, I don't care.
Mrs. Montgomery, why do you believe your brother is a thief?
Well, if you'll promise to keep it confidential. I naturally want no publicity.
No, I assure you, your story will not be publicized.
Well, very well. More than 30 years ago, shortly after my father's death, Kenneth forged my name to a check for $10,000.
How did you find out that he did it?
It was perfectly obvious. He was an irresponsible young man, and shortly after the forgery, he suddenly had a lot of money.
Anyone ask him where he got it?
Yes, he said he made it as a result of an investment. Of course, that was a lie.
Did you discover the forgery yourself, Mrs. Montgomery?
No, I didn't, but a Mr. Bryant, who was the executor of my father's estate and an old friend of the family's, found out about it, and he came and told me.
Now, you never prosecuted the matter?
No, Mr. Bryant convinced me that I shouldn't risk ruining our family's name.
Mrs. Montgomery, did it ever occur to you that your brother might have been telling you the truth?
He couldn't have.
Well, if you don't mind my saying so, I think that anyone who has his record with children deserves more of a break than that. Do you by any chance still have that forged check?
Yes, I have it.
And would you have any samples of your brother's handwriting of that period?
Yes, I kept all of the papers in the case in a special file.
Do you have that file handy?
Yes.
I wonder if I might borrow it.
For what purpose?
Well, I'd like to see if a hunch I have about your brother's innocence is correct.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, hello, Eddie. Have a chair.
Well, thank you.
Well, Eddie, what are you doing wearing a mustache?
Well, I bought a disguise kit, Mr. Taylor, so I could stay at the library and watch out for Mr. Norton without him recognizing me.
Well, that's a good idea. Well, tell me, did you see Mr. Norton?
Yes, I did.
You did? When?
Well, he didn't show up at all last night. I stayed until the library closed.
Mm-hmm.
But you told me to stay on it, so I went back this morning, and he came to the library about 10 o'clock.
Stockton?
I tried to talk to him, but he said he didn't know me.
He did?
Yeah. So I took off the red wig I was wearing, but he still said he didn't know me.
I didn't think he'd do that.
And then he turned around and walked out of the library. I trailed him, just like I saw a detective do in the movies.
Where'd he go?
I wrote down the address, Mr. Taylor. Here it is. 71 Vernon Avenue.
71 Vernon. That's not far from the settlement house, is it?
No. It's only about 2 blocks.
Good work, partner.
Here's that report from handwriting, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, thanks very much.
What's that, Mr. Taylor?
I had some papers analyzed by our handwriting experts, Eddie.
Are you going to go to see Pop now?
In a little while, Eddie. First, I've got another call to make. Look, you go back over to the settlement house. I'll see you there later on. Good morning, Mrs. Montgomery.
Good morning.
May I come in?
Surely.
Thank you. I have some news about your brother.
What kind of news?
Well, I took your file of papers down to the handwriting analysis department at our office.
Why did you do that?
Because I wanted them to study the signature on that forged check and then to compare it with samples of your brother's handwriting.
I don't understand why you had them do all that.
Well, Mrs. Montgomery, when this crime was committed, modern scientific handwriting analysis was not used in cases of this kind.
So?
Well, so today it's possible for experts to examine handwriting and to make a sound judgment based on their study. Well, those experts have just written a report stating that your brother did not forge that check.
I can't believe it.
Well, nevertheless, it's true. I know it isn't very polite to speak ill of the dead, but according to the report, the executor of the estate, Mr. Bryant, is the man who forged that check.
Mr. Bryant?
That's right.
I don't know what to say.
Well, I think that whatever you do have to say ought to be said to your brother.
But he's disappeared.
He was found this afternoon in a rooming house on Vernon Avenue.
Mr. Taylor, I'm not a young woman anymore. And about all I have left is my pride. Will you ask Kenneth to come to see me tonight?
Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Montgomery, but I think your brother has some pride himself. After all, he ran away when he was innocent. No, I'd suggest that if you want to see him, you'll meet us.
Where?
Well, if everything goes well, we'll be at the settlement house at 8 o'clock tonight.
Who's there?
Mr. Norton?
That's right.
Well, I'd like to talk to you, sir.
Come in.
Thank you. Mr. Norton, I'm from the FBI. Here are my credentials.
Well, what do you want here?
Well, I came up to ask you to come back to the settlement house.
I'm sorry, but I don't think that's any of your business.
You're quite right, sir, it isn't. May I ask you a question?
What is it?
Why did you leave?
Oh, well, I just got tired of listening to all those kids yelling and screaming in my ears.
I find it pretty difficult to believe, sir, that anyone who spent 30 years with children as you have would suddenly get to dislike them that much.
Well, maybe that's not the reason. Maybe I've got reasons of my own that I don't want to talk about.
Could it possibly be because of your sister?
Who told you that?
Well, I'm sorry if I seem to have pried into your affairs, Mr. Norton, but I've been to see your sister.
What for?
Well, I went there because I was trying to find you. She told me about that check for $10,000.
She did?
Yes, and with the aid of the FBI laboratory, we showed your sister that you didn't forge her name. Mr. Bryant was the guilty one.
What did you say?
I said Mr. Bryant was the one who forged that check.
How do you know that?
Handwriting analysis proved it.
Uh-huh. You told this to my sister?
Yes, sir.
Did she believe you?
Yes, sir, she did. And she'd like to see you. She'd like to try to make amends. I asked her to come to the settlement house tonight.
I don't want to see her.
Oh, no, Mr. Norton.
No.
Mr. Norton, it's Christmas Eve. Uh-uh. This is no time to feel that way.
She's coming to the settlement house. I won't go back.
Oh, now, look, Mr. Norton, you're not going to let all of those kids down.
Well,
now,
I just on, told
please,
you that
put on
I
your
won't...
coat. Now, if we hurry, we can get there for the beginning of the party.
Well, hey, started to snow just in time. Kids will be happy. You know, it makes it seem more like Christmas when it snows.
Yeah, sure does.
Well, here we are.
You go ahead, Mr. Norton.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little late. I suppose the party's already started.
I think so.
I better hurry upstairs and get into my Santa Claus suit.
Oh, it's in Mr. Williams' office. He told me to bring you right.
Oh, fine, fine.
You go ahead in, sir. I'll wait for you out here.
Well, thank you.
Hello,
Kenny. Grace.
Mr. Taylor was kind enough to invite me to the party.
Yes, I know, I know.
You haven't changed much, Kenneth. Kenneth.
Grace.
Oh, Kenneth, I'm so ashamed.
Oh, there. Now, don't, please.
All these years, I've falsely accused you.
Well, now, let's forget it, Grace. It's all in the past.
Can you ever forgive me?
I already have. Look, now, this is no time for crying, Grace. Here's my handkerchief. Now, here, let me dry your eyes. That's right.
Thank you.
Help me on with this costume, will you?
Why, it's a Santa Claus suit.
Huh? This is my annual job around here.
How wonderful.
I got to really hurry, too. Party's already started. Say, will you hand me that wig and beard?
Surely. Here you are, Kenneth.
Well, the boys are starting to sing.
Yes.
I better be getting out there. Will you join me at the party, Grace?
Of course.
The boys are waiting for you, Mr. Norton.
I know.
Merry Christmas, sir.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Taylor.
Soon we will all begin a new year. A year that can bring us happiness, prosperity, and a rich, full life. But those goals cannot be attained without work, without hard work and long concentration. There are few bits of advice that are applicable to everyone, but there can be no doubt that for each of us, life will be richer and fuller if we follow one set rule. If we live every day during the coming year with the love and kindness in our hearts that we have on Christmas Eve. For in that way lies peace on earth goodwill toward man.
On behalf of nearly 8,000 Equitable Society representatives, I wish you all a Merry Christmas.
The incidents used in tonight's transcribed Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons, living or dead, is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry D. Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Victor Rodman, Jeffrey Silver, Peggy Weber, Roland Winters, and Carlton Young. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating wishing you a merry, merry Christmas from the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at the same time to This Is Your FBI.
All right, there you have it. That's This Is Your FBI, December 22nd, 1950, with the return of Saint Nick, starring Stacey Harris, as heard on ABC Radio.